Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Leo Laporte. Episode 84 for August 29th, 2009. Foxy Proxy. This show is brought to you by listeners like you and your contributions. We couldn't do it without you. Thanks so much. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show that covers free, libre, and open source software. Here he is, the king of open source, Mr. Randall Schwartz. Hello, Randall.
I know nothing. I see nothing. If you're going to do the accent, I am going to do the accent.
I figured I should talk like the French guy from Monty Python. I don't know why.
Well, so today, I have to talk like a frog. Hello, give me the frog here.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Where's Jono when we need him? Who would have ever thought that Jono would be the serious one in the bunch, right?
It's hard to say, Leo, really, really. And unfortunately, Jono's not with us this week.
So taking the week off. Okay.
Taking the week off. He'll be back next week. But, you know, I can't have him on every show because then it's just so much fun. We just don't know what to say. Speaking of fun, we had a great time last week with those guys, the comics.
Wasn't that neat? Yeah.
That was a great show. Large panel. We got a lot of stuff covered. I was looking over my notes when we were done, and there was like 20 more questions I could have asked. But I tell you, it was just a wonderful show. It's just hilarious. And I did hear from a couple of the guys that there's one site actually got brought down with all the people that we sent to it.
I'm not surprised. I mean, when people watch live, we are live every Wednesday at 4:30 Eastern. When people watch live, they go to the sites we mention live. And usually we're sending a couple of thousand people. Well, now that doesn't sound like a lot, but most sites are not designed to handle 2,000 at the same time.
Well, no, this was on Sunday after we published the show.
Oh, was
Saturday,
that when the show came out?
When the show came out.
Well, that's even more people. That could be 10 or 20,000 people.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was really fun. So that's, I just want to let you know that it actually did have a big blip on these guys' sites. And of course, the problem is there's 3,000 back comics for GPF.
That's what was happening. They were probably going
through
the old.
And so people were reading everything from the beginning all the way to the end.
We do not recommend.
Had a great time with that.
This is not the Floss DDoS show. We do not recommend.
No.
Hey, before we get our topic today, Foxy Proxy, I'm really excited about talking to Eric Young, who is the creator of one of the most popular Firefox plugins, one that certainly has some real impact around the world for freedom of speech. But we'll talk about that in a second. But I have I have a question for you.
Sure.
And I meant to talk about this last week because it kind of happened last week. I was reading our friend John Resig's blog. He's the guy who did jQuery. We had him on the show. And he wrote a eulogy to Y, _WHY. And, you know, why, for those who
why
don't...
Why the lucky stiff?
Why the lucky stiff? He wrote... I first became aware of him reading his Poignant Guide to Ruby, which is one of the best introductions to the language Ruby, and is still out there. But he was a very... He was an artist, a programmer, a very prolific guy. He had many sites on the net. They've all disappeared. His Twitter site closed. His GitHub page closed. Whythelucky stiff.net, gone. PoignantGuide.net, gone. And John Resig wrote a eulogy saying, you know, two conjectures are common as to what happened. One, that his accounts were hacked and the site's taken down, or the other, that he just decided to do it himself. Resig says, I personally believe he did this deliberately and with some amount of forethought. Y's always been anonymous. I don't know if you've ever tried to get Y on the show, but I'm sure we wouldn't be able to. No one knows really who he is. Maybe some do. Do you know?
I'm two connections from him, so that's not a big deal. I probably could have gotten him on the show. I may still get him on the show. That might be cool.
I would love to know. So do you have any insight into what might have happened?
Well, he was outed. That's part of the problem. So when people found out who he was. When you play a character on stage and you're good at that and you weave everything together that way, but you have a totally separate life that's separate from that, and somehow they get connected somehow.
Mm.
You as a performer, Leo, you understand this. Now, you're different from most
people. I live my life in public. I mean, I am.
And I do, too.
Yeah.
And so, for me, it would be no big deal. In fact, I live it a little bit too much in public from what people are saying about my karaoke singing. But I can really see, I completely understand this. There's a couple of people in the Pearl community, for example, that are known by single name public aliases.
Mm-hmm.
And I know who they are behind the scenes. And for them, that aliasing is important. In other words, they
what
don't
is it?
Wanna,
what is it? There, I mean, I
you might not understand.
I don't understand it. Because
I almost don't understand.
I'm very public, and that's part of what I am. I mean, you could still have a private life,
right? But it's really to keep it separate. It's like, here are my actions in my commercial world. Here is the person I am on stage. Here's the person I am on the net. Here's that. To be able to have some semblance of downtime and off time. Now, I bet you don't have a lot of downtime in your life.
No, I'm always on, aren't I?
Exactly. Me too. And so I think it's that these people believe that by maintaining, you know, Batman versus Bruce Wayne, that they can be more effective in keeping their personal life and their business life separate.
I would never deny anybody's right, of course, to do that or reasoning behind that.
Right.
I think that's absolutely understandable, and God, I know I wouldn't necessarily. I mean, I'm suited to this, but I know a lot of people aren't well suited to it. So,
I know, like I said, I know of three people, and one has been outed with their own request. I mean, they came to a conference, and everybody figured out that Abigail wasn't a girl. So, you know, we learned this is Abigail, and it's not a girl. But that, and that
I think the thing that's interesting is that, and maybe this is what happened, is that people found out that Y was actually the very famous actor Jack Black, and it really kind of hurt his career as an actor. He looks just like Jack Black,
right? No,
no, that's he's not Jack Black. Okay,
that's not who the name actually came up to be. But yeah, it's so I can see that.
So we won't out him here. I don't think there's any need to do that.
No, and I'm not going any further with that.
But I'm glad to hear he's okay.
I'm pretty sure I'm pretty sure there's no problem with him personally. I think it's you know, his cover was blown. You know, Batman's cape got somebody stepped on it, and the mask came off, and so it's no longer, you know, that's what he wants to do, is not be that anymore. It may be that he'll come back out and start rebuilding his reputation under his real name, because everybody now knows the equation, but. But you know,
well, we'll leave that to him to do. We have no reason to out him.
Absolutely not.
I want to thank him for one of the best programming books ever written, The Poignant Guide to Ruby, which is stunning, a work of art as much as a work of programming. And wish him the best.
Absolutely, it's great. I mean, when you can do that, when you have that kind of body of work under whatever alias you want to use or whatever name you want to use, it's fine. I mean, it's great that you're able to contribute and produce that kind of great work in the world. So yeah, thank you for everything that you've done so far, and I hope you are able to get to where you want to go now that you've killed off Batman. You know, it's fine. It's fine with me.
It's his prerogative. Absolutely. You can understand. Go ahead.
One other thing to talk about today, only because today, as we're taping this, is only one day after yesterday.
It's almost always that way, I think.
Yesterday, though, as we're taping this, and probably 4 days ago as you're listening to this, it was the 18th anniversary of the announcement of Linux. So Linux is now an adult. It's an adult now. I mean, really, it can get its own credit card. It can... And actually, it does. There's two credit cards now for Linux, which is really bizarre. Linux Foundation and Linux Fund both have credit cards for.
And you're on the Linux Fund, we should say.
I'm in the Linux Fund one. Yeah, so that's the one I want to promote, of course, because that helps a lot of organizations that we fund. But Linux Foundation just released their own credit card, so you can actually choose which one of the nonprofits.
Can we get Linus on the show?
Well, you know, this is what I'm saying. Coming up in a few weeks, we're going to be at LinuxCon, both Jono and I. So I think the two of us can corner
Linus. Linus, 18 years old. We interviewed him a couple of times on the Screensavers.
Yeah.
Wonderful, sweet, unassuming guy.
Yep.
Just a neat, neat guy. And I think it would be great to get him on just to honor him for what he's done. I mean, he invented something that, again, getting back to this creative explosion. Well, I'll talk about this at the end of the show, but he really did something that empowered so many people to do so much more. He's the giant whose shoulders many of us are standing on. So that maybe would be nice.
Maybe I can trick him into it by telling him I'm finally going to pay him back for that lunch he bought for me a couple of years ago. So I still owe him lunch.
There you go.
I had lunch for them, but it's great. So 18
happy
years.
Happy birthday, Linus. Yeah, that's
doesn't
great.
Feel it doesn't feel like, well, there's a lot of ways that I know a lot of time has passed.
And just once for RMS, I'm going to say happy birthday, GNU Linux.
Oh, don't say that in my presence.
Just once for RMS. Just once.
Well, okay, that's fine. On behalf of Linus, I have to say it's just Linux, okay? All you guys that say with a GNU in front of it, too bad. It is just Linux. There we go. I'm going to get a whole bunch of hate mail. I don't care. That's my position. And Linus's position, by the way, as well.
So. I didn't know that, actually. We had Richard Stallman on the Screensavers, and he said, as a precondition of my appearance, you must not call it Linux.
No.
And in fact, he said, nowhere on the channel can you call it Linux, at which point we said,
no.
I'm sorry.
Well, I tell you what.
We're not going to change that. We'll do it on the Screensavers the day you're on, but we're not going to do it channel-wide. Sorry.
Hey, look, I've partied with Richard. I've partied with Linus. Linus is a lot more fun to party with, so I'm going to respect Linus's position on that.
Okay. If that's your criterion, so be it. Hey, Eric's waiting in the wings. We got to get him on. Poor Eric. Eric Young, he's the creator of Foxy Proxy. Is it Jung or Jung? How do you like to say it?
It is Jung.
Are you any relation to Jung? Carl Jung?
It depends who you ask.
What's mom say?
So for people who don't know, Carl Jung was a student of Freud. He was a famous psychologist. And yeah, it's my father's side. And you know, I've heard stories both for and against the relationship over the years. But even if there is a relationship, it's distant. So
that's pretty cool, though. It's a good name to have.
Yeah.
You can hang out with somebody named Old.
My ex-wife was a psychologist, and you'd think she would want to take that
name. Because, oh, yeah, be good for
no, her. No, she didn't.
Was her maiden name Freud? Because then maybe you'd want to keep it. You might want to keep it. Then.
Yeah, that's... You know. No, it was not Freud.
So whereabouts are you, Eric? This is the beauty of Skype. We have no idea. You could be in Berlin. You could be down the street. I have no idea where you are.
I'm in the next office right down the hall from
that
you.
That has happened. That actually has happened, and it's quite a surprise when it does. Yes.
I'm right outside Boston. I'm in a suburb of Boston.
And is Foxy Proxy your creation, your baby?
It is. And like I said earlier, I'm no longer the only person who works on it, but it's my creation. And, you know, we can go into why I created it if you like, but I'd rather talk about what it's all about.
We should start. I mean, Randall and I attempted, but why don't you, from the fox's mouth, explain what does Foxy Proxy do?
So before I answer that, let me back up and make sure everyone knows what a proxy server is.
Okay.
Because mm-hmm. if you don't know what a proxy is, I'm going to call it proxy, not proxy server, then it doesn't make sense to even explain Foxy Proxy. So a proxy server is a computer. It's a piece of software running on a computer somewhere that forwards requests to you, data to you. So let's say I'll give you, that's a very general definition, but let me give you a hard example. Let's say I'm a soldier and I'm stationed in Iraq. And when I was living back in the U.S., my favorite show was Saturday Night Live. And now that I'm in Iraq, I still want to watch Saturday Night Live on my time off. So,
well, good news, it's on Hulu.
Hey, it's on Hulu, yes. But you know what? When I go to Hulu.com from Iraq, I can't watch Saturday Night Live because Hulu says, you have to be in the U.S. to watch this video.
Bastards.
And yeah, well, DCMA, and I don't know what the legal ramifications are, but for whatever reason, a lot of these sites, not just video, but audio like Pandora, and you have to be in the U.S., and a lot of the BBC-related sites, you have to be in the U.K. So they're all geo-restricted. And, you know, you have two choices at this point. You can say, well, I'm not going to watch SNL, or I'm going to get a proxy server. I'm going to get a computer in America to download this video for me, this SNL video, and forward it to me while I'm in Iraq. And from Hulu's perspective, all they know is that there's a computer somewhere in the U.S., you know, watching this SNL video. They don't know anything about the video being forwarded on to Iraq for me to watch. So that's, in a nutshell, what a proxy server is, or why you might want to use a proxy server. And there's a lot of other reasons, censorship and anonymity and stuff we can go into, but a lot of people just want it for basic geolocation transference.
Can we actually back up a step, though? Because it sounds like only reason a proxy exists is to get around something, though. But let's go back to the basic use of a proxy. Let's say I was inside a school or an organization, and for various reasons, the organization didn't want to open up the access directly to the internet from every single desktop. They would typically put in an outward proxy server that my browser knows to go to actually, if I want to go to CNN.com, like I could do at home, but I'm now at work, my browser knows to go talk to the proxy server for the corporation to say, please give me CNN.com. The proxy server then turns around and asks CNN for the data. The data comes back to the proxy server, and the proxy server then hands it back to me, and this all happens transparently. That's sort of why proxies exist, is for this kind of traffic management for large organizations. Can we start with that?
Yeah, sure. That's definitely another use case for proxy servers. And maybe one of the more... In fact, that's the reason I wrote Foxy Proxy, was because as a consultant, I'm a Java software engineering consultant. I've worked at many different client sites, and I'm reliant on their internet connection. Well, not anymore. I have a 3G connection in my notebook. But I was reliant on their internet connection to get to the web. And like as you say, they go through proxy servers like WebSense and other products like that block. Well, they have blacklists of URLs they block, you know, things like Facebook and Gmail, Yahoo Mail and stuff like that. But then also they do dynamic content filtering. So they, in real time, inspect the content of the web page that you're requesting and determine if there are keywords on that page that, you know, meet certain criteria, they won't let you visit that URL. And as a consultant, that was very difficult. It was difficult for me to do my job. So, you know, I said, well, I want to use a proxy server. I started using a proxy server at home. I set one up at home. And the thing about most proxy servers is once you start using them, you quickly realize that your browser, your whole internet experience changes. Everything slows down and it becomes like 56K dial-up modem or even less.
It's
dial-up
horrible.
Modem days.
Yeah, yeah.
It's terrible because you have, you know, lots and lots of people using the same server at once, or even if you have a dedicated server, you're hopping through multiple points just to load the same website that you'd normally load directly. So things, your whole internet experience slows down. Foxy Proxy, where it really shines, and the whole point of Foxy Proxy is to load the blocked and restricted websites through the proxy, but load everything else directly through your normal internet connection. So you utilize and maximize that fast connection at work or at school or university, what have you. But your blocked sites load through your proxy, and your internet experience goes back to what you expect. You know, 1 megabit per second plus. Loading time. So that's why I created Foxy Proxy. It's become a lot more since then. It's become a much more generalized proxy tool. But the original reason is still valuable, and that's one of the, you know, that's definitely a user base that that's definitely a huge set of users that use Foxy Proxy.
So for example, if I was just go back to the Iraq example because I really like that example. Without this plugin, and maybe there would be a way, but without this plugin, typically the way you'd configure Mozilla is you would say, here is my one proxy. And so if I wanted to watch Hulu, at the same time I'm also wanting to surf local Iraq sites, what would end up happening is my Hulu would go to this US server, which would then go to Hulu and then come back. but everything I'm trying to look at locally that's in Iraq would also go all the way to the U.S. and back through that proxy server. And what you've done with Foxy proxies, you've made it possible to say, no, only Hulu goes to the U.S. and everything else stays right here. Is that a good description?
Right. Yeah, but actually it's more general than that. You said the sites that I visit in Iraq go through America. It's more general. It's every site. Every mm-hmm. site that I go to has to first go load through America and gets forwarded onto me. And it's, like I said, your internet experience becomes something out of 1995. It's just incredibly slow and difficult and painful, and you just don't want to use the web anymore. And Foxy Proxy solves all that in a nice, you know, easy to configure way. So, you know, there are other people that there are other different types of people that use Foxy Proxy. There are people trying to get around censorship issues. You know, a lot of countries, I'm sure if you've followed any of the news lately, you know, a lot of countries, especially say Middle East and ex-Soviet states, have significant censorship issues. Whether it's political or religious based or racial, you know, things about violence and countries have very different standards than we do in the U.S. We're quite privileged to have freedom, you know, net neutrality and freedom of visiting these sites. But some countries, I mean, Singapore, if there's a site related to homosexuality, you can forget about it. You're not going to see it. You know, like television shows, it's not just the internet, it's television shows, it's all media. I mean, like, for instance, Will and Grace, you know, that sitcom that was popular a while ago. You'll never see that in Singapore because mm-hmm. it's about a gay couple and they just don't want to promote Puff the Magic Dragon, like, you know, a children's song was banned in Singapore.
Well, you know, it's about marijuana.
It's all drugs.
I can't believe they even buy that crazy notion. Wow.
I know. That's just crazy.
So this is a political act, too. I mean, it's not merely to get to Hulu.
Absolutely.
It's a political act.
There's a political slant to it, too. And I never, you know, when I wrote Foxy Proxy, I never, ever anticipated this. I thought it was just going to be other, you know, bozos like me who work in corporate America, you know, at giant corporations, 10,000 plus employees, who have WebSense and these other content filtering systems, proxy servers, as Randall said, filtering out their use of Gmail and Facebook and what have you. And now it's like there's this audience of political dissidents that I've really really adopted Foxy Proxy, and I've had to educate myself on that whole audience because I really, you know, I was just another sort of dumb American in that sense. Well, hey, we have net neutrality and freedom of access and freedom of the press, and I didn't know anything about these issues. But surprisingly, there's a lot of countries that you would expect not to have the kind of censorship that do have censorship, like Western nations like Australia and the UK. They have censorship that, I mean, I never thought Australia and the UK, I mean, these are Western nations, right? You know, not sort of fundamentalist Middle Eastern Islamic, you know, Turkey and United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia. But, you know, Australia, for instance, back in March, they have a blacklist of URLs of websites that you cannot visit in Australia. They actually censor hundreds of websites. And this blacklist was made public on WikiLeaks, which is a great site, by the way, if anyone doesn't know it.
Oh, yeah, I love WikiLeaks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
WikiLeaks.org.
That's right. It's go WikiLeaks. That's all I can say. So this blacklist was leaked somehow to WikiLeaks, and it's really funny. Some of the sites that were on this list was a dentistry office, a boarding kennel, a dog boarding kennel, a couple of bus companies.
That's crazy.
An anti-abortion website, you know, which regardless of how you feel about abortion, I mean, you know, you would expect that people in a country like Australia should be able to express their views on abortion, even if you are not necessarily for it. Anyway, when you start looking at some of these sites, like, why is a dentistry office on this blacklist? Why is a dog kennel on this blacklist? And in the best case, you could say, well, the people in charge of this blacklist, the censors, screwed up, right? They just entered the URL wrong or something. In the worst case, you could say there's some problem here. Like, well, maybe what if, you know, the brother of the censor is a dentist or owns a competing dog kennel and he calls up his brother, the censor, and says, hey, if you add, you know, this dog kennel to the blacklist, then people won't get to their website and I'll get all this extra business that I wasn't actually getting before. And, you know, there's an enormous opportunity for abuse and there's no accountability. There's no judicial oversight or review, no way to appeal. If you get added to this Australian blacklist, there's no way to appeal your addition to this blacklist. And at least today, hopefully that'll change. And the UK has a similar, you know, I could go on and on, but the UK has a similar egregious situation with banning of, you know, back in December, they banned album cover from 1976 of Scorpions, if you remember the Scorpions. Yes.
Who could forget? A classic hair band.
Exactly. Yeah. They actually banned a Wikipedia page that displayed this album cover from 1976 because it supposedly can be interpreted as Satanists. Child pornography.
Oh, all right.
So I know that it sounds like Foxy Proxy is great at getting around things.
Yes.
And I just want to say, somebody in the chat room said a wonderful quote that I just want to bring up, is that the internet sees censorship as damage and routes right. around it.
Right.
It's a beautiful quote. And I think what you're saying is that Foxy Proxy is one of these agents of being able to route around things. But I also, you know, just so people don't tune us off halfway through the show here, that Foxy Proxy does have a lot of legitimate uses for advanced configuration for proxies and things like that. I just wanted to bring up one other advanced configuration that I've actually used Foxy Proxy for, and you might elaborate a bit on this if you can help me with this. I was working for a company that had a VPN back in from the outside and working on websites that were inside the company and facing only inside the company. And I was able to set up Foxy Proxy so that when I visited those particular websites, it would actually route over a SOX tunnel to go visit them, but not hurt the rest of my internet experience. Is that another typical use of Foxy Proxy?
I didn't follow all that. So you were at a company and you
I was outside the company, but working for them. So I had a VPN that routed some of my traffic for certain sites through inside into the company firewall. And I was actually working on websites that faced only inside the company. So I was able to use Foxy Proxy to say, if it matches this URL or this regular expression, I need to go through the SOX tunnel. But all the rest of them, I should just go out to the internet.
Right. Yes. And that falls into, that's definitely a use for, and that's the sort of the corporate America, you know, like me and you, we work in the IT industry as programmers or what have you. And that's definitely a use case. That's definitely something that I hear. That's actually, a lot of people buy Foxy Proxy Plus for that reason. I do have a pay version where you can do things like routing by IP address. So if I have this IP address right now, I want to use this proxy, but if I'm on a different IP address, say, you know, 10 dot blah, 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 I want to use a different proxy or no proxy. So there are definitely a lot of people that use it for that.
So let's talk about what Foxy Proxy actually is, because I know we're sort of saying how it's being used, but so the basic Mozilla out of the box has a screen that says proxy, and what is it limited to, and where does Foxy Proxy take off from there?
Well, it's much like IE. If anyone has ever, I mean, this actually dates back to the first browser days. Amazingly, the interface for proxy configuration has hardly changed since 1994. I have screenshots up on my website somewhere on there of the original browser, and now I'm spacing on the name in 1994.
Netscape, right? No,
Netscape. No, it's
Mosaic.
Mosaic, right. Thank you. Yes, yes. It, which became Netscape in a sense. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah. I mean the way you configure the browser by default is you type in the address, the host name or the IP address of your proxy server, and port and everything. I think in some cases you can type in some exceptions like localhost and 127.0.0.1, you know, but it's very sort of limited in the way that you can route traffic. It's kind of a binary all or nothing. Everything goes through mm-hmm. the proxy server or not. Mm-hmm. Proxy server adds value on top of that. Foxy proxy adds value on top of that in the sense that you can very clearly and specifically define what goes through a proxy server and what does not, and in what orders, and you can define multiple proxy servers. So in Firefox and IE and SeaMonkey and Opera, you can't even define multiple proxies. You're limited to a single proxy server. So Foxy proxy furthers that capability for you to, you know, by defining, you can define multiple proxy servers if you have that. And my cat is compared to
that's fine. Hello, kitty.
So is that /bin/cat?
Oh, I like that. A little Unix joke. That's good. That's real good.
Does your cat have any switches?
Is it cat 5 or cat 6? If I had a cat, I'd name it cat 5.
Or cat dash you for an unbuffered cat, because that's what they usually are.
Unbuffered cat. I like that. I like that. I'm not sure that how that would go over with the women, but
right.
But hey, Randall, you're not married.
Go ahead.
We're
talking
care,
about
right?
proxies for a second.
You don't have time for marriage. Is that what you said?
Oh, you were watching that, huh?
Yeah.
We should explain
for the previous show
for
yes.
people who are listening to the podcast that for some reason I really am not sure why. I have allowed Randall control of the live video stream while I'm eating lunch before the show. And he's revealing
once,
all.
Maybe only once.
It may be the last. No, I didn't watch any of it, so I know nothing.
Okay.
And I'm maintaining that stance.
Okay.
So anyway, you can watch this show, by the way. We do it live every Wednesday at 4:30 Eastern, 1:30 Pacific at live.twit.tv. Yep. And then you see all the stuff that we cut out.
Yes. All the outtakes. You should
all
see
the outtakes.
The reel here.
It's like Cannonball
Run. So you were
Run.
Explaining about proxies there, sir. Sorry, please continue.
Do you come with a pre-configured proxies, or do I have to know what proxy to use? I know you work with Tor.
Single-handedly, probably the number one most requested.
Because it's not enough just to have Foxy proxy. I need to attach it to a server.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that's difficult. Well, so the short answer is no. There's no predefined list, but we are working on that. And one of the forthcoming versions, we will have that. The problem is, here's the problem. There's lots of public proxy servers available out on the web that you just Google proxy server, and you'll come up with, or you go to the Foxy Proxy website, and there's lots of public lists of proxy servers that you can use. The problem is, since they're public, they're shared with thousands or millions of people.
Well, and there may be security issues as well.
That's true. Yeah, there may be security issues.
I mean, I've heard tell, it's anecdotal, that some Tor endpoints are occupied by the RIAA, for instance.
That's right. Not just the RIAA, but the German government also has been. So if people don't know what Tor is an anonymizing dark net. I don't know if that's the right term, but it's sort of a internet within the internet. And you can, if you install Tor on your system, on your computer, whenever you request a website or any URL, what happens is that request goes through, let's say, 5 to 10 to 20 different machines. And these machines are spread out all over the globe. And you finally get your website back, but it's gone through 20 different machines, scrubbed of any kind of private data or cookies and what have you. And it's in effect anonymizing, but I mean there are limitations, like Leo just pointed out, with you know, if the exit node on the Tor network is from a nefarious party, they could log where you're going and what you're doing, and nobody really knows who the exit nodes on Tor are. I mean, it could be anybody. It could be the CIA, for all we know. I mean, who knows? Anybody can start up an exit node on Tor. You just have to announce yourself. So,
it'd be kind of hit or miss, because, you know, you don't know what kind of traffic you're going to get. It's randomized. Yeah. But, you know.
And it's incredibly slow, too. I mean,
Tor is painful.
And that's, again, where FoxyProxy comes in, because I only want to route my blocked websites through Tor. I don't want to slow down my whole web browsing experience to 56K. I just want to route my blocked URLs through that. So Randall, you're asking about privacy, I think. What were you asking me about? Sorry.
No, you were covering it there. So the reason you would have this is the reason FoxyProxy has an advantage then is because I can specify some sites, like you're saying, some sites can go through Tor, but most of the sites can just go out straight to the naked internet, and I don't have to worry about that. And FoxyProxy is able to handle that, able to say, these URLs just use straight IP connections, these URLs tunnel them through Tor via this SOX address and so on.
Right. Yes. I'm sorry. I remember... Leo, you were asking about
where's the list
lists.
Of proxies. Yeah.
So all these lists are shared amongst thousands of people, and they're limited. There's a limited bandwidth amount of bandwidth for all these people. So let's say, you know, it's a 10 megabit per second connection this proxy server has, and there's, you know, 10,000 people using it simultaneously because it's a publicly published proxy server. Well, your experience of surfing the web is going to be incredibly slow, and so you can either, you know, use these public lists, and like I said, FoxyProxy will shortly have the ability to import lots of these lists as other extensions, Firefox extensions too. Or you could subscribe to a paid proxy server service, and there's a bunch of companies out there offering this. You can choose your country. You can say, I want a proxy server in America. I want one in the UK. I want one in wherever, Japan, Germany. And they're relatively inexpensive. You know, for $5 to $10 a month, sometimes even less, you can get unlimited bandwidth in the country of your choice. And
my experience has been using these public proxies is really not been very good, and I don't think I'm alone in that. So do you recommend using a paid proxy? Is that...
Well, I mean, if you can afford it, yes. Yeah. They're not
it also expensive. Leaves a paper trail. So if you're in China, for instance, trying to get around censorship, buying a paid proxy is not going to work. That's when you might want to use Tor or something like that.
That's true. Although you could say, you know, like some of the proxy paid proxy servers, if you go through PayPal, PayPal's an American company. So in order for you to lose your anonymity in China would have to somehow subpoena PayPal for their records. And, you know, when you're talking about multinational corporations like this, it's not necessarily easy to get all the records, but you do have a point. That's true.
Yeah. So, but you know, if you are you know, a dissident, political dissident, you could probably put up with some slowness, just for the fact that you're getting to you know, search Wikipedia for Falun Gong or whatever, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there was a guy in Singapore. I mean, speaking of political dissidents, there was a guy in Singapore in 2008, less than a year ago. He was jailed for 3 months because he criticized a judge. He said something. He called her a prostitute or something, and he was thrown in jail. I mean, that's the kind of thing we take for granted here in the U.S. And maybe other Western nations, Canada and what have you. But the rest of the world doesn't have the kind of freedoms we have, and that's why proxy servers are and sites like WikiLeaks they're very important to expose this kind of limitations or restrictions.
Have you heard of any sites that block downloading FoxyProxy?
I've heard of it. It's sort of a catch 22, huh? You need Foxy Proxy, but how do you get it if it's blocked, right?
Yeah. Right.
In fact, I get emails periodically. I get emails from people saying, hey, can you email it to me? Because all my internet connections have it blocked. And, you know, it is a catch 22. I do the best I can to help those people.
But for everyone else, to install it, it's pretty simple. You go to the extensions page for Mozilla and look it up. I mean, how does somebody find this if they wanted to install it?
You just go to, well, you have a variety of ways. You can go to addons.mozilla.org and type in Foxy Proxy and install it, or you can go to our homepage, which is foxyproxy.mozdev.org. Or you could just Google Foxy Proxy and you'll be able to install it pretty quickly. But there are a lot of corporate, especially corporate proxy servers that block Foxy Proxy because, well, they just block anything with the word proxy in it. So if you hit a web page that has the proxy, you're not going to be able to view it. It's a very common problem, actually.
That's pretty interesting to delete all the things that say proxy, but that's okay. Could be talking about all sorts of other proxies too. And once you get it, it's simple to install in Mozilla. So it's just a couple clicks and everything, and it's all like it's any other clicks. Mozilla extension. Right?
The hardest part is probably finding a proxy server. The first thing people want to do is, all right, I have Foxy Proxy now how do I get a proxy server?
Yeah.
And I'm like I said, we're working on addressing that shortly.
That's the problem. Is there a place, a reliable directory that you could just even recommend now?
Well, I would say yes. If you go to,
you don't have anything on the Foxy Proxy site.
I do. No, I do have. I have a list. If you go to foxyproxy.mozdev.org/proxylists.html, this is a handpicked by me.
Excellent.
Handpicked list. Mm. Of sites that have relatively reliable and relatively fast proxy servers. Now, you know, you got to take the word relative to heart here because, you know, this you're not going to get the kind of speed you expect with, say, a Verizon Fios or, you know, even DSL or cable internet. It is what it is. And if you want to pay, like I said, if you want to pay a few bucks a month, you can get a lot better service. And we actually, that is one of our services that we offer on.
Yeah, I see here paid proxy services as well. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we're certainly not the only game in town. I don't want to suggest that we are. There's a lot, you know, just Google paid proxy services and you'll find lots of options.
So you run these paid proxy services on your site?
I do. Yeah. Well, it's not through MozDev. Yeah.
I do.
I have a network of
that's great.
Proxy servers around the world. Right now, the ones that you can sign up for directly are the UK and US because those are, you know, definitely the most popular.
There's a lot of UK and US ones. Is that because people want to watch Hulu? I mean, is it really stuff like that?
Yeah. Amazingly. I mean, the largest audience seem to be people that want to watch BBC iPlayer.
Right.
Which is...
So we'd need a UK proxy for that.
UK, right. And Hulu, amazingly. And there's a bunch of others.
So just to make that clear, you want a proxy in the nation that you want to appear to be coming from.
Right. Right. And it's funny, we get a lot of emails from people, hey, I'm in Dubai. I need a proxy server in Dubai.
No, you don't.
That's
what you don't want. Right.
You don't. You want to get around Dubai.
Right.
But, you know, there's a little bit of an education process that goes on there. So
now I'm kind of interested in the political issues. A couple of things come to mind. First of all, do you run a risk running a proxy? Is there any danger in doing that, doing those proxies?
That's a good question. And
could you be subpoenaed for activity that goes on? Are you liable for that activity?
I don't know the answer to that because I'm not a lawyer.
Do you destroy your logs?
Sorry?
Do you destroy your logs?
I don't. Other proxy services do, but we're very clear that we're not an anonymizing service.
Right.
So there are companies that focus on that. Privacy and anonymity are very... you know, it's a very touchy subject, and I wouldn't claim to know how to scrub logs to the degree that some of these people want and expect. And then all that, you know, that also, Leo, that also encourages a lot of criminal activity that I just don't want to get involved with. I mean, there is a subculture to this of, you know, child pornography and pirating and
that's what
things
comes
that
up.
I just
that's what comes up.
Yeah,
exactly.
I just don't want to get involved with that. So no, I do not scrub the logs, and you should never ever think that you're completely anonymous on the internet. That is the one thing I want to make clear to people if they hear this and they think about Foxy Proxy in terms of anonymity. Whether or not you subscribe to a proxy service that claims they're anonymous, I'm telling you, you just cannot. There's too many attack vectors. There are too many ways. There are flash cookies. There are all sorts of weird attack vectors that you can't anticipate, and you can't take the word of a stranger saying, yes, we anonymize your logs. We anonymize. You cannot ever assume that you're anonymous on the internet. Don't ever post something. Don't ever write something thinking you're anonymous. Somehow, some way, somewhere, whether it's now or 10 years from now, somebody will be able to connect whatever it is you wrote to you.
Good words to the wise.
Indeed. Hey, before we run out of time, I want to ask you about Password Maker. Can you talk about what that is and
sure.
how that's used?
Sure. Password Maker is another Firefox extension, open source, is the motto is one password to rule them all in terms of Lord of the Rings. It's another project where so you know, I'll do you the sort of the elevator pitch. You know, everybody has passwords for dozens of websites they log in, whether it's a forums or a Facebook or a Gmail or Yahoo Mail or what have you. We all have dozens of credentials that we have to remember, and sometimes we write them down. We put them in Notepad, we put them in Excel spreadsheets, whatever. We store them somewhere. And you know what? That's not safe. That's opening yourself to the possibility for hacking. That's a honeypot. That's something that somebody's going to go after if you store them online. So what Password Maker is a series of, well, it's fundamentally it was a Firefox extension. It's now been ported to lots of other platforms. Where you can dynamically generate your passwords in real time. So you type in your master password and the URL of the website you're visiting, or any arbitrary string. It can be your Skype ID, what have you, and it shows you the same password over and over and over again, and it never ever stores it anywhere. So you can retrieve your passwords in real time by typing in the same information every time, but not be susceptible to honeypotting and brute force, or sorry, not brute force attacks, but susceptible to hacking. You know, someone finding out your password. If someone, you know, let's say you store your password on Gmail. If someone were to get you that password and you use the same password on different sites, they can log into you potentially at these other sites, let's say Facebook or Twitter, using your Gmail password because you've been lax in using the same password on the same site, on many different sites. Password Maker encourages you very easily and quickly to use different passwords for every site without having to remember them. You only have to remember one password. And it's reported.
So Password Maker takes a password that I remember in my head, or maybe on a Post-it, and makes a different hard-to-guess password for every different site I go to, but consistently the same unique computed password for each of those sites.
Yes, you're doing a hash.
Precisely. It's doing a hash, and if you don't know what a hash is, it's a mathematical function that is a one-way encryption or a one-way function. So you take some input, let's say your master password and a URL, and that gets transformed into a password, And there's no mathematically feasible way for somebody to take that generated password and derive any of the input, so your master password and the URL. And in that way, you're protected from any kind of storage or hacking. And actually, and as I was saying, Password Maker's been ported to a lot of different platforms. So if you don't have Firefox, for instance, you can use it on IE, you can use it on the web, you can use it on your mobile phone, you could use it in Java, you can use it in Yahoo Gadgets, all these different platforms, Mac OS, OS X dashboard. There's an OS X dashboard widget that somebody wrote. So it's, and there's another, there's actually a company called Abeen, who is porting it to a sort of for-profit implementation of Password Maker.
I use a bookmarklet that's similar, probably less secure because it's JavaScript, called a Super Gen Pass. Are you familiar with that?
I am. And there's a bookmarklet version of Password Maker as well.
I'm going to have to check out Password Maker.
The thing with Super Gen Pass and some of these other bookmarklets is, if you don't have that bookmarklet accessible, like let's say you're at the airport and you log on to a internet cafe and you don't have that bookmarklet readily accessible, you're sort of at a loss for how you're going to log into Facebook or Twitter or whatever. So how Password Makers are different is because you can visit the Password Maker website and in real time get your password generated for you by just typing in your master password.
Right. I think Super Gen Pass has a they call it Super Gen Pass Mobile, where you go to the site and you type it in and you get it.
Okay.
Yeah. I've been using that for a couple of years, but it's the same idea. I don't know. Say again? It is because it's JavaScript. So right. You can see that. This is one thing that concerns me a little bit.
That's not necessarily open source, Leo.
No, I know. It's clear source. It's not. They're not encrypting it or anything like that. But it's not necessarily open source.
But they're not licensing.
I don't know what the license is. No, I don't know. I'll have to see what the license is. I might have to change. Of course, that means I'm gonna have to go through all my passwords. It's a great idea. It's what I recommend everybody use this, because then you always have a password. It's a different password for every site. You don't have to remember anything complicated. But it generates really good, strong passwords.
Precisely.
And this is getting more and more essential, too, because if you're using the same one or three or even 10 passwords for the thousands of places, hundreds of places at least, a lot of people are logging into, one of those is going to get cracked open. I had a sort of a bad experience recently. PearlMonks.org got cracked into.
Yeah.
And luckily, I had a unique password there.
By the way, this is Super Gen Pass is GPL'd.
Oh, good, okay. Good. Yeah. I'm happy to hear it.
And Password Maker is similar, right? It's an open source license of some kind?
It is. It's GPL version 2, yep.
Okay.
Yep, the additions and like, yeah. But, you know, PearlMonks, so it's a perfect example. I mean, you don't know how they're you don't know how the website that you're signing up for is encrypting and protecting your passwords. And if they get cracked, if they get hacked, and your password is revealed, you don't want to use that same password on your PayPal, on your bank accounts, and because people just, you know, they run a bot and they log into, say, the top 5,000 Alexa websites, and they know your username and password, and if any of them log in, it's immediate, you know, financial disaster for you.
Yep.
Yeah, it's definitely so. I mean, I highly recommend everybody, if you're using the same password more than three places, you're already insecure in two of them. So time to move on to something like Your Password Maker or Super Gen Pass or something like that. So thank you for providing that code as well.
Has that been pretty stable? Sorry, go ahead.
Has that been pretty stable? I mean, you haven't had to change the algorithm at all, right? Because that would blow up everybody's existing.
That's kind of what I was asking, because MD5, hasn't MD5 been
It has, corrupted? Yeah. It's been compromised.
Compromised.
So ever since one of the first or second releases of Password Maker, we've had your choice of hashing algorithm. So, I mean, there's, I don't know, 8 or 9 or 10 different hashing algorithms you can choose from. And it chooses, SH1 by default. But you can certainly, you know, you can certainly change that to SHA-256 or what have you for the encryption buffs out there.
Cool.
Yeah, see, I'm stuck with MD5 and Super Gen Pass, so I think I might be moving. I might be moving.
So that'd be a reason to change there, Leo. MD5. MD5 has got rainbow tables against it already.
That's right. Yeah.
You're screwed.
It's got,
well, not that screwed. You'd have to work pretty hard to get it. Come on.
Yeah, that's true.
Site I don't know. Site. If I have a PS3 cluster,
yeah, I guess. And once you get the master password, then you know all my passwords because, I mean, that's what you're looking for is how do I get the, can you, I guess you could reverse the hash to get my master password, yeah.
Yeah, once you knew
no,
that
you can't reverse the hash. That's
or I mean, use the rainbow tables to get the master password. Could you?
You might be able to. MD5 is questionable no matter what, though, at this point. MD5 is definitely not anything anybody should do in a new deployment.
SHA-1 safe?
For now. They made a couple of SHA-1 collisions, but it was really something that wouldn't be replaceable.
Right. I haven't heard it called SHA. I was saying SHA. So
SHA.
SHA. Yep. The algorithm of choice for hashing today is SHA-256.
256, okay.
SHA-256.
I'm switching. I'm switching right now. I'm going to have to go to every site. But you know, that's probably a good hygiene anyway, to go through all your sites and change the password once in a while.
Absolutely.
It seems to be. Yep. Yep. We'll have to get to Steve to talk about it on security now. Hey, he could review Password Maker. That would be cool.
Absolutely, yeah.
Need to do that, yeah. Very
there
cool.
Goes the cat. There goes the cat. Black tail. It made me jump.
So that's a move bin cat left right.
So it sounds like you kind of Eric or like to do open source software. Do you do this for a living? I know you can donate to Foxy Proxy.
I don't. I this is actually just something that sort of started on the side. I'm a Java C++ software architect and have been for 17 some years, and work for Fortune 500 giant corporations, and I only got involved with open source maybe 8-9 years ago. I don't know, 7-8 years ago.
Awesome.
And I'm involved with all sorts of different projects. We've only touched on a couple here, but I volunteer a lot of time at Mozilla and MozDev. I'm the board of directors for MozDev. Mozilla, I review add-ons. I'm an add-on reviewer. So if you submit an add-on to Mozilla, before it becomes public, it has to go through a vetting process. Right. We want to make sure people aren't submitting malware, and we want to make sure people have fun when they install add-ons. So there's a vetting process that goes on, and I'm part of that team. It's a very close-knit, dedicated team. We're very dedicated and really pay close attention to security issues and making sure that whatever add-on is that's getting hosted on our site is not something that's going to corrupt your system. I somehow became involved in open source, like one of the many other thousands of people, 7, 8, 9 years ago, and it's been an incredible experience. I wish more people like me, sort of traditional corporate software engineers, would get involved, because even if you do little things like testing or bug reporting and not necessarily development, you add a huge value to the community. And I can't say enough, I can't encourage people enough to become involved in whatever your passion is. If you're a Ubuntu user, if there's some open source project like Audacity or whatever it is that you are interested in, that you use as a user, and something you it's missing, something you want to see put into that piece of software, go help the people. Go help people like me who are working on it. And you don't. That doesn't mean you have to code. That doesn't mean you have to sit down and spend weeks and months working at this. It just means you got to commit an hour or two here or there to whatever the person on that project might need.
Well said.
Definitely.
Yep. We should all definitely. Do that. Translate into Czechoslovakian, whatever it is that you do, you could do.
Because there's so many different ways people can help, and it's really not
documentation.
Just about programming.
If somebody can write, please help.
Documentation. Here's a perfect example. Password Maker, a German guy, I don't even remember his name, I remember his handle, Romeo, wrote this 15-page manual for Password Maker in PDF format, and it's amazing. I mean, he wrote it in his spare time. He's got a full-time job, and little contributions like this. He wrote it over the span of probably 6 months, and before that, there was no manual. There was no way. People just had to sort of explore Password Maker and figure out on their own, or post messages in the forums like, "Hey, how do I do this?" You know, little things like that. You don't have to be a huge techie to contribute to open source. You can just be a tester. You can be a documenter. Mm-hmm. You can be a spokesperson. You can be a proponent for whatever it is you're passionate about, whatever software package you're passionate about.
Even people like John O'Bacon, we could find something for him to do.
Yes. Or even very importantly, you can share it with somebody else nearby. You know, if you can turn somebody else on next to you to something like Foxy Proxy, you know,
that's doing
that
it
helps.
Too, isn't it?
One-on-one helps. Yeah.
Yeah.
So very good.
Very true.
So Eric,
true.
Fascinating stuff you're talking about here. It's interesting seeing all the various uses for Foxy Proxy that you've been able to find and help other people with. And I'm glad you made things like Password Maker so we could, have ways of having different passwords everywhere, like I personally have been affected by. So I really appreciate you taking your time to be on the show today. It's been a good conversation.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the invitation, and it's been my pleasure. Leo, I'm a huge fan.
You still like me? You haven't learned to hate me yet?
Please don't retire.
I'm not retiring.
I'm not sure what I'd do.
I'm having more fun now than ever. It's really...
He's reclining, but not retiring. But he can't really recline on the ball.
I may be declining, but I'm not retiring. No, it's great. Well, and thanks. It was really nice to meet you, Eric. And thanks for the contribution you make. And I'm going to switch over to your password program from Super Gen Pass because I want the best.
Thank you so much. Yeah. One password to rule them all.
Take care, Eric. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Eric.
Take care.
See you later. Bye-bye. Now, we continue on. I'm blushing. Can you see I'm blushing?
I can't see you're blushing. Actually, I can, but most people listening at home aren't going to be able to.
You look like you're blushing, actually.
It's all the coloring. I've got this stupid camera keeps kicking in and out. I have no idea what color it's picking for me today.
It was really nice. I was flattered, really. It was very nice of him to say that.
That was very cool. Yeah. I just want to say, because of the black vans that are circling around the back of my house right now.
Yeah, don't you run that proxy server.
We officially at Floss Weekly do not recommend any illegal or illicit or violations of any law or code.
Do not recommend. Hell, I tell you, don't do it. Stop.
Okay.
And I think, this. He I think handled it very well. But this is often the way people try to use proxy servers. And I like the fact that he's saying... we're not anonymizing. And I think, there are servers that anonymize, but that's not what Foxy Proxy does. You are in public. That's fine. If you're in China and your goal is to find out what's going on with the Falun Gong, you have ways of getting around it. You have ways of anonymizing. But I think that that's important because I think there are a lot of people who want to use these proxy servers for illegal purposes. Particularly pornography.
But you're saying China, though. I mean, you're saying...
Need to anonymize. They need to anonymize because the government there, or Singapore, or any of these countries, will try to track them down. Yeah. But if you're not in China and you're using Foxy Proxy, that's fine. Nobody's tracked anybody down for using Hulu in the UK or iPlayer in the US yet.
Well, don't say that. They'll start trying.
No, I don't think so. I think that they're sufficient. They just want to put up a barrier. They know the barrier can be left over. They just want to put up a sufficient barrier to keep the average Joe from doing it. That's all they care about.
I suspect so, but I'm just saying that it's my particular personal official opinion that you shouldn't do anything with Foxy Proxy that you wouldn't be able to do without it, but that's just me.
Well, what is a legitimate use for a proxy server?
What
you were doing.
I have a, I'm outside a corporate firewall and I have a VPN that goes inside and I want
only some of my access is to go in through the corporate firewall to get to the corporate firewalls or through the inside corporate websites. I mean, that's
a very good
very legitimate use for Foxy Proxy, and it is exactly my most recent use of it. The last time I was working for a large company whose name ends in an exclamation mark that recently scored a deal with a big company in Redmond, but I can't actually mention the name. But when I was working for them, I was working on internal websites. The only way to get to those internal websites was through the SOX gateway that I had set up. And I only wanted those internal websites to pop up through the firewall. I had to actually look at the rest of the internet from the outside. So Foxy Proxy was great for that. It said everything that matched this URL went into the company, you know, the OO.com address just went right inside and everything else stayed outside. And that was exactly what I needed to do. And it wouldn't have been possible with straight Firefox. So this is really nice that so like Foxy Proxy exists. That's how I first became aware of it. So yeah, there are absolutely legitimate uses for Foxy Proxy. This is a wonderful tool for all those legitimate uses. And there are other uses, as we talked about earlier in the show.
I know nothing.
And I'm just devouring all knowledge of that. And it's great. I appreciate, you know, people who use tools for achieving political ends. That's great. But I'm not going to advocate for or against that in this show.
You know, I'm going to Dubai in a month. I didn't know that was a politically repressive area. Is it?
You thought China was bad. No.
Well, it's true. I went to China. Look at that. When you go to a place like China, the people, you're going there for the people. You're not going there to shake hands with the president. You're going there for the people. And same thing for Dubai. I'm going to be speaking at a TED conference. Did you know that?
You're speaking at TED?
TEDx. It's a franchise okay. TED. But all the TED people will be there because anybody who gets a chance to go to Dubai says, yeah. I'm really looking forward to it.
Take your sun cover and your big sunscreen because I'm sure it's going to be really bright there.
The thing I like about speaking at TED is 18 minutes. And I think I can do 18 minutes. That's all you could. You're only allowed 18 minutes. You know, you go on there and you speak for 18 minutes.
Can you even say anything in 18 minutes, Leo? I'm not sure.
No, you might be right. Are you saying I'm verbose?
No, I'm saying that you have a wealth of information.
Well, I'll have to pick and choose. What I was thinking of talking about, and this it ties very well into Floss, is the impending, in fact, you're seeing it already, creative explosion that's going on in the world because the monopoly, the media monopoly has been broken, and it applies to software too, that had created an artificial scarcity. And now we all have a chance to become creators, whether it's video, audio, or software. And somebody like Eric, who's a one-man shop working by himself, can create something of immense value that then we all build upon, right? Because it's open. So,
Like Linus Torvalds. Perfect. I mean, for him to have created Linux, you know, and have the whole world leverage on that. Or Larry Wall with Perl. Actually, you know, almost all of the guests we've had on Floss Weekly have all been people who, you know, one-man shops have turned into something that has been, you know, earth-moving by the time that the momentum kicks in. It's just, it's been great. And then it's really cool that this has all been happening.
And we're seeing it. I mean, we're really seeing it. I was talking the other day with somebody. I guess it was my daughter, Abby. We were watching Flash Mobs. You know these great, I love Flash Mobs. There was one in San Francisco on the 40th anniversary of The Who performing Tommy at Woodstock. And they took over Union Square. They started playing Pinball Wizard really loud through the speakers. And you know what a flash mob is? People kind of surreptitiously gather, mixed in amongst the tourists, and then do something. In this case, it was a dance. You probably saw the famous flash mob in the, was it Antwerp? The train station with Do A Deer, Do Re Mi. Just mind-boggling. And we were watching this, and I always get teary when I see these. And I guess it's because it's kind of this affirmation of the human spirit, and it's kind of magical out of nowhere. People are dancing and creating, and it's beautiful. And I realized this, people might do this. They might be inspired to do this, but it wasn't until YouTube made it possible for millions of people to see the effect that there really was an incentive to do this. People probably have danced spontaneously in town squares for years, but now it's because of YouTube, because of this creative explosion, people are doing more and more of these things.
So this is why 20 years ago, is it really 20 years ago? God, it is, isn't it? 20 years ago, I got involved with cable access.
Yes, to break the monopoly.
Yeah, instead of having all of my television, all of my listening, all of my watching come from corporate America. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Yes, there is.
Okay. But, you know, it was the last place that was free of censors and sponsors.
Exactly. And now anybody can do it. You know, they asked me to serve on the board of directors of our local cable access here, and I said, why?
Yeah.
You don't need it anymore.
No. Anybody with a Ustream or a Stickum or just pushing stuff up to YouTube has their own channels now. And it's really, you're right. It really is a game changer. It's taken the creativity out of the hands of the few into the hands of the many. Yep. And it's just, it's great. This is, and I love what the people, especially in open source, because that's the same sort of thing. It's like you're building on somebody else's work and achieving, you know, heights that you wouldn't have achieved otherwise without having this platform to be able to stand on. And it's really cool that we've, again, it's a thank you, Leo, for the privilege of letting me work with you to do this show so that I've been able to talk to some of the key movers and shakers in the industry. Speaking of which, can I talk about some of the upcoming guests?
Oh, you are king of segue.
Is that a segue or what? You know,
yes.
I'm not driving around on two wheels, but I'm still on a segue. All right.
go ahead, Randall. Sure.
So next week, we have Angela Brown. I've actually had the privilege of meeting her a couple times in person. She's the publicist and promotions person for LinuxCon, which is the big open source conference happening here in Portland in a few weeks after that. And she's agreed to talk about what LinuxCon's all about and some stuff also about what the Linux Foundation has been able to do, since this is Linux Foundation's gig. So she's coming on next week to talk about that. I'm also hoping, I'm still waiting a last-minute confirmation, to have one of the other Linux Foundation board members to be on as well, which would be really nice. We can talk more about what Linux Foundation's all doing. After that, we have the week following, we have Paul Davis, who is going to talk about Ardour, which is a multi-track audio editing system, similar to a little similar to Audacity,
well,
but it's...
I'm using... Audacity, we talked to them, right? Yeah,
but Ardour's like a little bit fancier. It's got more plugins, and it's more... It's more specific to real sort of multi-track editing and mix downs, things like that. The Audacity sort of is a little loose at that, a little bit rough at that. So Ardour is a little bit more fancy at all that stuff. And I'm actually, unfortunately, going to have to skip that show. So good old John O'Bacon is going to be our guest host for that week. But every week we're doing a show, so we're just pushing it out there. Kent Beck, immediately following that, he's the king of extreme programming, test-driven design, patterns, and so on. He'll probably talk a little bit about the history of Smalltalk and all that sort of stuff. We're still waiting to see who's coming up on the short list. Probably Monty Wydenius is going to be coming in soon. We're probably going to get a couple guys from the Core Boot Project back. We had to push them back for some reason. Maybe talk about GNOME coming up soon, which would be really nice. Anyway, lots of stuff on there. Go to twit.tv/floss for the upcoming show spreadsheet. If you see somebody that's not on there, how does that work? Wait, if you don't see somebody on there, if you know of somebody that should be on that list, there we go, English. Then please email me. You can email me at floss@twit.tv. That'll get right to me. You can also follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/Merlin with a Y and find out more times when I'm going to be live on stream, because I stream from time to time and I announce it on Twitter. And I'll also be in Atlanta in DragonCon in a couple of weeks talking about Obama and whether he's doing well for the open source community. That's actually my...
That's your topic?
Panels. Yeah, it's one of my panels down there. So that'll be really cool.
Boy, I'd love to hear that.
I'll try to stream it, actually. We'll see if I can get that.
Oh, good.
It'll be like Saturday afternoon, and I'll see if I can push that on the stream.
Well, that's awesome.
The internet connectivity there is a little bit dicey, so it'll probably be on my 3G, which probably won't work very well for streaming, but we'll see if we can make that happen. So that's what's coming up there, sir. Appreciate the time again that you took out of your day to have a great show with our guests. So thank you, Leo, always, for helping me do this show.
I look forward to the show every week.
Well, great, Leo.
Fun. Thank you, Randall Schwartz. We'll see you all next time on Floss Weekly.